everybody. Welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly, podcast episode number 84. Today we are going to discuss some movies that we saw this weekend, like The Expendables, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and Mazer has completed StarCraft II. Congratulations, Mazer.
It was, I'm pretty sure most people beat it in like the first 2 days or something, so it's basically a tutorial for like the multiplayer, which I have not even touched yet because I'm probably get killed in about 2 seconds. It's been a really long time since I've played online, so, but I'm looking forward to getting into it, but first I gotta catch up on sleep, so.
Sounds good. Perfect. We're also going to talk about some other geek movie news out there. Just a couple bits of information, like the new Darren Aronofsky film, Black Swan. The trailer was released this week, so we'll talk about that. We're also going to talk about Matthew Vaughn's insane casting of hundreds of people in his X-Men First Class movie. It seems like every day there's a new casting announcement on that movie. So we'll talk about that. And I'm your host, Dr. Vankman, and I will now introduce our panel. We have Mazer with us today. Hello, Mazer.
I'm good. StarCraft.
All right. Now, last week I asked the panel a question regarding favorite soundtrack, and everyone gave like a musical score. This week we are doing a compilation.
Otherwise known as a soundtrack.
Yes, a soundtrack, an actual soundtrack of various artists. So, what do you think?
I'm going to have to go with, I don't know if it is the best movie soundtrack, but I know it was something that it had so much music that I was able to play it over and over again, which was the Forrest Gump soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
It was like 2 discs, or 3 or 4, some ridiculous amount. And it just had music from every single era, and they were all like really good, like, you know, kind of uppity, energetic songs. There was no kind of downer music in it. So it was a really easy soundtrack to listen to.
That's cool that you should say that. I had a friend who listens to the podcast. I'll give him a little shout out, Tim. He sent me a message on Facebook today that said, two things, The Rocketeer is awesome, and Forrest Gump is the best soundtrack. And that was it.
So, there you go.
Okay, cool.
What about you, Ben?
How
you feeling?
I will say Dazed and Confused. I love that soundtrack. So much classic rock and stuff going on in there. I'm sure there's other probably better ones, but as far as just rocking out, that's where I go.
Nice. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
P. Vader?
I would probably have to go with the first Kill Bill soundtrack. Just mainly for two tracks on there. One, I think it's called like Battle for Humanity.
Yeah, Battle on Without Honor or Humanity,
yeah.
Or something.
Battle Without a Cause.
That just, when they set that to the slow-mo walking scene, that's just one of my favorite scenes in movies in general. And then the other one is it's by like, or I think it's called like Santa Esmeralda. That is either the people who wrote it or the name of the song, but it's when Lucy Liu fights Uma Thurman at the end, and you got the claps going, and that's a really good song as well. So
awesome. Well, I'm gonna go out on a limb, and I'm glad no one took mine because I don't know. I really enjoyed the soundtrack. It was my introduction into some of the bands like the Shins and various other artists. Garden State.
Nice.
The Zach Braff movie. I love that soundtrack. Incredibly.
There's been a lot of hate in recent years for Garden State, but I will firmly stamp my seal of
really?
Approval.
Really? There's
on
hate?
That movie. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I like the soundtrack. I like the movie, too, but definitely definitely on board with the soundtrack.
I want to give out I don't know if it's a soundtrack or whatever, but for me, it's kind of like a guilty pleasure movie music, which is the music from the movie Josie and the Pussycats.
Dude, I know, right? I agree with you on that. What the hell?
I've never seen that movie, but I embarrassingly feel like I would agree with you guys. I don't know. I feel like
it's,
that would be.
It's actually
that would
no. It's
no joke. It's when that movie came out, I don't know what it was, but I listened to that soundtrack all the freaking time, and I'm like, why am I listening to this?
Which is
this
funny because we
Josie and the freaking Pussycats. The music sucks, but I can't stop listening to it.
Yeah, I think it's because it. Like I remember listening to it semi recently, and it was like, this is kind of like pre Paramore, like girl rock type stuff, and like you probably like me don't own the movie on DVD, but have the soundtrack for some reason.
We should talk about fictional bands in movies one time. On a day that when nothing else comes out, like maybe in the you know coming couple weeks or something.
Talk about some Stillwater.
Yeah, exactly. From Almost Famous and maybe the Oneaters, the Wonders that thing.
Oh, that's another great
like
created music for a film.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's not say any more, just in case we do end up talking about
it. Stop it! You're gonna ruin it.
All right.
Okay, so. We're going to move on to some quick box office numbers. I know we're like really late in the week and about to hit the next weekend, but whatever. We're going to do it. Okay, number one, The Expendables brought in $34.8 million in its first week. I honestly wasn't expecting that, but it did. So that's awesome. I saw The Expendables and I enjoyed it, and I will talk about that later. Number two, Eat, Pray, Love at $23.1 million. Thankfully, that didn't beat out The Expendables, because if it had, the world as we know would have come to an end.
The geek world, probably.
That's true.
Would have come to an end, yeah.
Number three, The Other Guys, which I also saw this weekend. And I'm going to talk about, while we're here, might as well, because we're not going to... Everyone... like hyped this movie up so much for me. Everyone's like, oh, you gotta see it. Even all you guys were like, oh, you gotta see it. My dad was like, oh, it's so funny, you gotta go see this. Everyone I ran into, oh, you gotta see it. Man, I just did not enjoy that movie.
No way.
I'm dead serious. I was like, I mean, I laughed a couple times.
Was this after you beat puppies? What happened?
Dude, it wasn't as funny as as everyone made it out to be. I think I was expecting something so much more. So when I saw it, I was just, my expectations were so high that I was just let down.
Wow.
That it didn't meet my expectations. So
I'm disappointed for you, because that's one of the more enjoyable theatrical experiences I've had this summer, in a summer full of
I don't know.
Really
maybe
terrible
I was
movies.
Just in a weird mood. I don't know.
Was the audience laughing?
Yeah, did the audience get into it?
I don't remember.
Because I feel like the audience can influence your mood, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. It's just, man, I was kind of bummed out because I was hoping to, like, get more into it, but it didn't happen. So I'm sorry, guys.
It's okay.
Man, all right.
I know.
Comedy, you know, we've talked about this before. Comedy is so freaking subjective, so it's impossible to say... this is funny for everybody, so I don't blame you for not liking it in any way.
Well, thank you. Thank you for somewhat backing me up on how I feel about this movie. Okay. Inception dropped down to number four at $11.2 million. Come on. It's not going to stay number one forever. And maybe not surprisingly, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World came in at number five at $10.6 million. I know this, I expected this movie not to get number one, but I didn't know it would go all the way down to number five.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair to say that it was surprising. I mean, the three movies opened that weekend, the three big ones, and you would assume that they would play one, two, and three in whatever order that would be.
Yeah.
But two movies that had been out for a while skipped ahead of Scott Pilgrim, so. Yes. I don't know. Before we get too far into this, I think there's been so much written over the past couple days and weeks or whatever about how much Scott Pilgrim's going to make at the box office. What is it, you know, is it going to bomb? Is it going to do whatever? And then, like, when it didn't really do that well, there's been all these pieces. Practically every single website has written a piece saying, like, oh, don't freak out because Scott Pilgrim, you know, bombed at the box office. It doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. Or, like, oh, Scott Pilgrim sucks, what is your, you know, what did you expect, blah, blah, blah. You know, everybody has this, it's become the thing to write about as of late. And I think we should just skip over that talk completely because it's utterly irrelevant. Like, I just don't think it matters at all. I think in a few years, people are going to look at Scott Pilgrim as a cult classic and remember it as fondly as, say, The Rocketeer, like we just talked about.
The Rocketeer got its legs cut off by, you know, The Prince of Thieves with Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
And, I mean, does anyone
care? Prince of Thieves, I mean, that was a great film.
maybe that one song.
That, you know, Bryan Adams song, yeah.
That was an awesome song.
But yeah, I just wanted to avoid us talking about box office for Scott Pilgrim for like half an hour. Not that we would, I'm just trying to undercut that before
No, that's
get
fine.
Started.
No, we're going to get into the review anyway, which is all that pretty much matters. But before we do, we are going to travel back in time to the year 1994, the weekend of August 12th through the 14th. So every week we come together as a group, and I make our panelists guess, or I guess give a movie that they think came out on the year we travel back in time to. So we're doing 1994. All right, guys. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, no one else is going to step up. I'm going to go with Lethal Weapon 3?
Nothing with the Lethal Weapon.
What?
3?
Nothing with the Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, there's nothing in that. I'm sorry, buddy. You lose.
I'm going to guess something that I have no right guessing, and that's because I probably should never have seen this film, but I embarrassingly did. Hudson Hawk, starring Bruce Willis.
Well, that would be wrong.
Okay, all right.
Because it's not on there. I'm sorry. I've seen, just the hint, I've seen 9 out of the 10 movies on this
list. Wow. Jeez, we are...
Yeah, but you see a lot of movies, Hankman does.
Well, still. I watched them all this week. I'm just joking.
That would have been the more impressive thing. Yeah, I can't even place in my
Save
mind...
Save us, Mazer.
Is there a Harrison Ford film?
Uh-oh.
Yes, there is a Harrison Ford film.
The infamous Mazer generalities.
Okay.
Very directly heads.
Is there a Jack Ryan film?
Yes, there is a Jack Ryan film.
Jeez.
Which one, though? You know, there's the one. It's one of two, right?
Yeah. Is it Patriot Games?
Dude, come on.
Who's the other one?
Clear and Present Danger.
Okay.
And that was number one.
Wow.
You could have had number one had you guessed.
That was the
50-50
coin flip away. Oh, man.
So close. So
see,
close.
I didn't go with my Bond film this time.
Yeah, that's
I went
good.
With Harrison Ford. Bam.
And we also talked about, with the soundtrack, we talked about one of the movies, too. I'm surprised no one picked up on that. So anyway.
Oh, of course. Forrest Gump, right?
Yeah, exactly. Number two. So... Okay, so number one, we've got Clear and Present Danger, $15.9 million. Forrest Gump, number two, $14.1 million. The Mask came in at number three at $10 million. The Little Rascals, $7.4 million. Number five, True Lies at $7 million. Number six, In the Army Now in its first week made $6.3 million. Number seven, The Client, $6 million. Number eight, The Lion King at $6 million. Ooh. Number nine, It Could Happen to You, which is the one movie I didn't see.
What is that film about?
It's Nicolas Cage and like maybe Elizabeth Shue or Cher, right? He writes a check to like $1 million to some random waitress or something. I think that's the.
All right, depending on number 10, I may have seen all 10 films.
Number 10, Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah,
okay,
nice.
I've seen all of those.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I've seen. Well, I'm not even going to get into it. Okay, go ahead. Keep going.
So there you have it. That's This Week in Box Office History, 1994, the weekend of August 12th to the 14th. Now on to some movie reviews.
They are the world's greatest mercenaries. The only life they've ever known is war. The only loyalty they've ever had is to each other.
Drop your guns!
Got the four on the left.
Why don't you take the two on the right and leave the rest?
You're not that fast anymore.
Oh, here we go.
The only thing faster is...
light.
Exactly.
We'll see.
Well, I got three pieces of work. Two a walk in the park and one to hell and back.
So, we are working for the agency.
I gotta recon this island first.
The only thing you need to know is the job's real and the money's real.
Give this job to my friend here. He loves playing in the jungle, right?
Right.
It's his problem.
Who saw The Expendables?
I did, Ben P.
P. Vader as well.
And I did as well.
I have yet to catch it, so...
This movie was freaking awesome.
Oh,
man. All right, we're going to be battling this one out here.
Go ahead, Venkman.
So
Start us off, guys.
How could you not like The Expendables? Like, seriously, that movie was so badass in every way imaginable.
Really?
The action was incredible. Sure, the dialogue and the script and the story and all that stuff was
See, you just said it's awesome in every way imaginable, and then followed that with, sure, the story, the script, all this stuff sucks, but whatever. Yeah. So
everything that makes a movie and not, you know, a TV commercial, right?
The extended parts of the story. You mean something to give a movie a 2-hour duration? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Dr. Beckman,
I had a blast watching this movie. Even with the bad dialogue and stuff, I just thought it was fun. I mean, I knew going into this movie what I was going to get. I knew what to expect. And honestly, I thought... you would like this movie, Ben, for the fact that you really are into the Transporter series. Yeah. And I thought, oh man, yeah. And I thought this was, you know, better than the last two Transporter films.
I'll agree that it was better than Transporter 3, but I will fight you to the death over it being better than Transporter 2. But that's a different story. Yeah.
Sounds good. So yeah, I thought you might appreciate it for what it was, like you have the Transporter films. But apparently I'm wrong.
P. Vader. Please.
I think I should be the bridge in between reviews here. Because I mirror your statements, Venkman, and I knew what to expect from this movie. It was kind of exactly what I expected. So I wasn't disappointed really at all. that being said, I think it just tries too hard, kind of, at being fun, and it's not fun. Like, we're gonna review two movies today. One is fun. This one tries to be fun, but it's not. Like, I think, unfortunately, for the most part, I couldn't understand what the hell Dolph Lundgren was saying, or
dude,
Sylvester Stallone.
I'm so... See, I thought Dolph Lundgren was awesome in the movie.
I think my favorite...
I was like, hey, look, it's Dolph Lundgren kicking everybody's ass. That's awesome. I don't know. I didn't care what they were saying.
I mean, I think this movie works on a theoretical level only. And it's that you get all these guys together. It's great. Like, it's great to see them together. But just because they're together doesn't mean the movie is great in and of itself. I think Mickey Rourke and Jason Statham I liked in this, but I think the plot is just non-existent. The characters are, I guess, just kind of flat, really.
Oh, forget about the plot and the characters. What about the action, guys?
Yes, and there are many, many explosions, if that's what you're looking for. And ridiculous decapitations with knives, etc. But I think, just overall, it might be one of those movies that picks up some steam and they get a sequel out of, but I don't think it's going to be worthwhile if it ever comes about, because the original isn't worthwhile. So,
okay. Man,
I agree with a lot of what you said, obviously, P. Vader. I think...
so you're not agreeing with me?
He's going to kill you.
Will not agree with you. I'm sorry, man. If anybody in the world should love The Expendables, it should be me. I am a huge Stallone fan. And I was really looking forward to this, and obviously, as any kind of guy action movie fan would, as soon as they released the ridiculous cast for this movie. But P. Vader brings up a very, very good point, that this movie works on paper, and it does not work in practice. I think, you know, hearing these names is, like, too much excitement for us to handle, and then when we see the final product, it was not... good. Like, listen, I mean, I realize that's a simplistic way of saying it, but, you know, you, Dr. Brinkman, you keep kind of going over and over and just saying, oh yeah, skip the plot, skip the whatever. But P. Vader brings up the point that this movie is not fun. It's like, that's what I wanted this movie to be, was, you know, getting a huge cast together like that, you almost have a duty to make the best out of it, to make the most out of it. This is one of the most ridiculous casts ever committed to film, right? Yeah. So you have to do something with it, and they do nothing with it. This is one of the worst written movies I've ever seen my life. The plot makes little to no sense, and the character motivations are all over the map. Stallone meets this woman for, what, 3 hours, and then decide, you know, somehow escapes this island, you know, on the wave of another action scene, and then decides to come back for her, even though she's given no indication that she wants him to return, or whatever, like, nothing, okay, I see what I know what you're gonna say, and you're gonna say, oh, it's just an excuse to get from one action scene to another.
No, I'm not gonna say that. I'm gonna actually get it, because there is that dramatic moment with Mickey.
See, you can't
Rourke.
Even say it with a straight face. But go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, there's like that dramatic moment with Mickey Rourke, where Mickey Rourke says, you know, I wish I would have helped that girl instead of just walk away, you know?
Oh, yes, like, the one dramatic moment.
And that was Stallone's motivation to go back. Be like, I've got to help this girl. I'm going to regret it the rest of my life.
Man, I can't even really acknowledge that as being a legitimate plot point, to be honest with you. It's so terrible, Dr. Brinkman. Listen, I love explosions, I love action movies, and as you mentioned, I love the transporter. So the one scene, I enjoyed a couple scenes in this movie, I'm not going to say I all out hated it. I've definitely seen way worse. So anybody who's listening to this and thinking, you know, otherwise, I'm trying to put a stop to that right now. But so I will say that I enjoyed the Jason Statham basketball kind of takedown. I won't give any spoilers, but if you've seen the movie, you obviously know what I'm talking about. And then a couple of the explosions were, yeah, pretty cool. At the very end of the film, though, and this is not a spoiler because it freaking is what the entire movie is about, more things exploded there than at the end of Transformers. Like,
it was amazing.
You think that there's nothing left to blow up, and then something else blows up in slow motion. And like,
I was drenched in sweat from the heat of the explosions coming out of the screen.
Okay, and I have to point out that one of the more laughable moments in the movie is the montage leading right up to this, where they're both, where all the basically the group of Expendables is running through this compound, slapping things of C4 along columns that are, what, 10 feet from each other, and they're putting one on every single column, like, over and over and over and over again, and then
dude, they had
just
had
massive.
an unlimited amount, man.
Right, yeah.
It's like,
and then, so
why not?
I
you know?
I mean, guess so.
If I was
going like
to go
this.
Blow up a place, I would have massive amounts, and I'd just be sticking them everywhere. And be like, hey, guys, just take these and put them all over. Just throw it like confetti, you know?
Right. Yeah, well, here's
Let's blow this shit up.
Here's my two things, okay? Number one is, if I'm going to enjoy this movie, it has to do one of two things. So number one being, it has to be fun, like we were talking about. We were talking about the A-Team. You guys we've reviewed the A-Team on this podcast before. You guys saw it and we talked about it then. P. Vader and I saw it later and never really had a chance to talk about it, I don't think. But that movie was a lot of fun. It embraced what it was and took advantage of it, and everybody in the cast seemed to have this kind of light tone about it.
They had a role that they could play, too.
There's also great pacing in that film.
Yeah. So, that movie was a lot of fun, and the big moments, the explosions, whatever, are paid off throughout that film because of how much fun you're having along the way. You can overlook the ridiculousness of it because everybody involved embraces the movie as being ridiculous. The Expendables is not that. If The Expendables was that, I would love it. It's just not, though. Stallone and Statham spend most of the movie just walking around whining, taking themselves way too seriously about these women that mean nothing, ultimately. Charisma Carpenter character and Statham, like, I don't know, it just goes from, the plot is just so paper thin as far as this stuff goes. So and they take themselves way too seriously. They just, you know, sit around in Mickey Rourke's bar / motorcycle shop / tattoo parlor and like
/ knife throwing
a dart board center. Place and then sports center, that's nice. And then just like lament women long past and stuff. It's just completely, you know, they take it way too seriously for the movie to be any fun. Okay, so that's number one. Sorry for being so long-winded there. Number two, the only other way that I would have really enjoyed The Expendables is if it actually made some sort of statement about something. And this movie does nothing like that. Stallone's two prior directed films, Rocky Balboa and Rambo from 2008, both actually had legitimate things to say about the world, about humanity, the human condition. Rocky Balboa is this kind of treatise on aging and you know, how, you know, legacy, things of that sort. And Rambo is like, it's very much a ridiculous action film, but it also, underneath the surface, is a kind of commentary on the atrocities going on in Burma, right? So there is something there to kind of dig into. There is nothing there in the Expendables to dig into. I expected, if you're not going to have any fun with this cast, and making jokes about Jet Li's height does not count as having fun, by the way. And if
Which,
you're not going to have...
Isn't Jet Li actually taller than Stallone?
I don't know.
I have no idea. That would be funny if it's true. I'm not sure. But if you're not going to have any fun, then at least use the opportunity to grab this whole cast and do a massive parody of the genre. Like something like Edgar Wright would do, for example. Like something smart, something relevant, something that actually says something about the way that these guys were brought up in the movies and the way that their careers have kind of been based on making movies like this. And instead, Stallone co-wrote this movie with a guy named David Callahan, I think, and they just write what they think is a good action movie, and it's not. It's just terrible. Like, I don't know what they were thinking. They just blew the opportunity to actually say something relevant, say anything relevant, and just made this kind of straightforward action movie that's neither fun nor kind of socially conscious, and I was just utterly disappointed with it.
I think a good gauge of how serious people, at least the people that we saw this movie with, were taking it.
Oh yeah,
was they were laughing at the movie.
Yeah,
like Ben made the comment, they weren't laughing with the movie; they were laughing at the movie, at just kind of how stupid it was.
And the one-liners, like every one of them fell flat in our theater and when we were watching it, and nobody was laughing when they were quote-unquote supposed to be laughing. It was all people laughing at terrible dialogue and people laughing at shot choice and just, you know,
ridiculous deaths.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, man. I can't really, as much as I would have loved to love this film and recommend it to everybody, I would say it's got to be a rental for me. I would say, yeah, check it out on DVD or something. Please don't pay.
To me, it sounds ultimately like Stallone was trying to do way too much. Like, if there had been a script, I don't know how they signed everyone on. I guess money to a script that sounds like it was pretty bad. And then Stallone directing, okay, he just did a couple ones recently, and he's done it for quite a long time. He's got a lot of experience. I don't see too much reaching there. But then he's acting in it as well, so he's doing all three, which he's done with his other films. But because there's such a huge cast, did it seem like it failed because he was trying to do too much, or was it because it was just a bad story, bad...
I don't know. I give Stallone props as a director, because he's done some really great stuff as behind the camera. But this one from, I don't know, P. Vader, if you might agree with this or not, but it felt more like Stallone was trying to emulate action movies of recent times as far as style goes, instead of going back to the kind of 80s classic action movies that he actually was starring in. Like, the editing and stuff was very Bourne-esque, I thought. There was a lot of shaky cam, a lot of quick cuts and stuff, and that's not what Stallone is known for. He's trying to fit this movie into such a tight mold, I thought. Dr. Venkman, what do you think about that? Do you think I'm onto something there, or do you disagree?
No, I think you're right. But I still enjoyed the film. Definitely there's room. It could have been better. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I just enjoyed it for what it was, and just kind of took it in and had a good time watching it.
And there's something to be said for that. If you go in with zero expectations, then you'll probably have some fun with it.
It met my expectations. Like, I knew what I was getting myself into when I saw it.
Right, and that's the same thing that happens with every movie. Everybody watches every movie with a certain set of expectations, and as long as the movie meets those, then you're probably going to walk out of it, you know, happy. For me, I probably put a little bit too much faith in Stallone. Which I feel like was a mistake on my part in hindsight, but I just was not, I was expecting something to chew on, something a little bit more than what we got, and I just, you know, if it had fun writing, or if it was like Transporter 2 the entire way through, I would have loved it, but it wasn't that for me.
Is there something that they could have tweaked, one small thing they could have tweaked that may have turned the film around?
Completely rewritten the script.
Yeah. So there's no small tweak that could have been done to save it?
I think if we're talking tweaks,
it's just
small is just not going to cut it.
That's true.
Okay.
Dr. Brinkman, real quick, let's talk just a tiny bit before we move on about the cast themselves. Like, how did you think everybody did? I know you said that you really enjoyed Dolph Lundgren's performance.
I don't know why. You know, it was just one of those things I've never...
He's been doing a lot of direct-to-DVD stuff
exactly.
So it was cool to kind of see him on the big screen again. I will give you that.
I mean, the guy's a big guy. He looked great up on the big screen, you know. I saw him up there, I'm like, man, why is he not making more action movies for the big screen, because he's got such a huge presence up there. And I really enjoyed what he brought to the movie. And I know sometimes we couldn't understand what he was saying, but it was still, I thought it was fun listening to him do this English accent, you know.
Well, he's probably in the film to make Stallone sound more audible.
Yeah, probably.
By contrast, right?
So I enjoyed his performance. As for Jet Li, he really didn't have... I wish he would have had a bigger role. I mean, he was in it a lot.
Is that a pun?
Yeah, right?
A bigger role?
Yes. No. I don't know. Okay, anyway.
He wasn't in it a lot, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And I wish they would have done more with this character, because they did some weird stuff with it, but at the same time, just like I said, I took it in, I enjoyed it. You know, it was like, I need more money. Why? For my family.
Yeah.
And it was like, wait, you have a family? He's like, yes, I have a family. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, that was really
and that
weird.
Was like a, that was like a, that they played that joke out through most of the film. You know,
I was expecting there to be some sort of payoff at the end of the movie, about that with his family being like a set of knives or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or spoiler alert, whatever. I'm just pause. Okay, if you want to fast forward, he doesn't have a family.
Yeah, which is,
you know, it's like I don't really have a family. I just want more money. Yeah. It's like, what? Okay.
Yeah.
Aren't they all mercenaries anyway?
This is an example of the brilliant writing of this film, folks.
So they're not mercenaries.
No, they are.
They are. Yeah.
It gently just makes this excuse that he wants more money to support a family that doesn't exist for some reason. And then everybody's like, okay, whatever.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
Nice.
I also will say that David Zayas, who plays Angel Batista in Dexter, was awful as the villain in this movie.
Love him in Dexter.
I do too.
Yeah, I agree.
I cannot take him seriously.
He does not have the presence of a dictator.
No.
I just remember the first teaser trailer or something that came out of The Expendables, and he was in it. I was like, oh my gosh, that is so cheesy. Yeah. I was like, this is going to be like 80s cheesy, because his acting was terrible.
Yeah.
And that was just the trailer, teaser trailer.
Yeah, bad news.
And that's why he wasn't in any of the other trailers.
Jason Statham, he was probably the best part of the movie for me. I enjoyed what he did, and I don't know if you notice this or not, but is it just me, or did he smile a lot in this movie, or what?
He seemed to be having a good time.
I've never seen him smile so much in a movie before.
Yeah, I think part of what makes those transporter films fun and Crank and stuff like that is that he plays it so seriously all the way through, and that's why we're allowed to kind of laugh at it and enjoy it, is because the character himself doesn't do that. And this one, he's like laughing and joking around the whole time, and it's like, it just makes it that much more kind of cheesy, I think.
Yeah. Who else was there?
Bruce Willis and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the most like useless cameo of all time
Schwarzenegger. Right?
Yeah, they're in the trailers. Willis is on the poster, and then I'm like looking on IMDb, and they're uncredited, which is hilarious because they're used in the advertising.
Yeah, I don't know. They didn't need to be in the movie, but they threw them in there just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
Just put everyone up on the screen together, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that,
I'd
recommend it.
No. I'd give this movie.
See, I knew that, but I recommend it.
I think I can recommend it on a rental level, and I'd probably give it like a solid C. It's just kind of an average movie, but you've definitely seen worse, you know?
Yeah. Seen far better and far worse.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Moving on to, this is probably one of my favorite movies of, definitely one of my favorite movies of the year, Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
If we're gonna date, you may have to defeat my seven evil exes. You have seven evil ex boyfriends?
Bingo. Consider our fight begun.
And I have to fight? Defeat your seven evil exes? Pretty much.
Prepare to die.
What?
Zap, how's life? He seems nice.
This movie was awesome. And joining us now is Mealy Kane to talk about Scott Pilgrim.
Say hi.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Venkman?
Oh, you know. Okay, let's get into this, guys. Come on.
This is one that I can throw my support behind 100%.
I hope so, because I'm very disappointed if you didn't.
I know. I've been so negative on this podcast already today. But I will be
Comes the positivity.
Almost under 100% in support of this film. But I'll let you guys talk about it first. Mazer, what do you think?
Me? I didn't know anything about it. I heard of the graphic novel, never read it. Seen some things about it, Was excited from the first trailer, and the music. It was very much a film that felt like it was referencing everything that I like in media, with movies and video games and music and
totally
just like cool art and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it panders to our demographic very well.
Maybe too well.
Maybe, as the box office numbers would indicate. Amelia Kane, what do you think?
I really liked it. I had one kind of issue with it. Just, should I say?
Yeah, why not? This is our forum.
What this podcast is about.
Yeah,
this is
our forum
is
for
that,
issues.
Scott Pilgrim and Ramona's relationship was so stupid and not believable, and like, it seemed like they would break up after, like, two dates if it hadn't been for the whole, like, the evil exes came, and then he fought for her, and then they're like, oh, I fought for you, so we'll be together. But their relationship was stupid. They had nothing in common, and they just fought all the time. And I don't mean, like, him fighting her exes. I mean, like, they would argue all the time. And when the second ex showed up, like, she ran away or something, which is lame. Lame girl.
The books, I will
now,
say...
Now, I've had relationships like that before, so...
Yeah, I know, but you're not supposed to root for him in the movies. You're supposed to be like, Joey, learn from her and move on to the next girl.
Yeah, but that's not how it works. You have to go through the pain and suffering.
I know, but I'm saying, like, nobody made a movie about you and your old girlfriend, and we're like, oh, he's gonna fight for her, and then they'll be happy forever. Oh, no, wait.
Actually, have you seen the movie 500 Days of Summer?
I have, but
the
whole point
of... about.
I know, but the whole point of the movie is that, like, after you learn the whole story, you were, like, happy they broke up, that they, like, had known each other and learned and, like, moved on. But that's not what this movie was. This movie was about, like, fighting for a crappy relationship.
We should have thrown up a pretty big spoiler for 500 Days of Summer, by the way.
You know what?
I'll put it in the show notes.
Quite frankly, I think the spoiler alert, like, statute of limitations on that one is
it's
done.
Over.
All right, that's a whole yeah. nother story. But okay. I will say that the books, if you guys, please, everyone listening to this, please read the Scott Pilgrim graphic novels. They're so good. And the relationships that are... not exactly very well fleshed out, as Mila Kane points out, in this film are much more adequately explained in the books themselves. That is not an excuse for this film, because I realize that you
there's
can't
no
possibly
excuse for this film.
No, I'm just saying no. You can't possibly expect everybody to read the source material before you go into a movie. That's ridiculous. So the movie, it has to stand on its own, and I feel like it does that well enough. But yeah, you're right, there are definitely some flaws as far as character development and stuff. It does seem like, why would Ramona even be interested in Scott at all? He's jobless and has no ambition, and he's in a real crappy band, so there's no reason for her, who is pegged as like this super cool American girl, like, why would she be interested in him at all? So there are some kind of things that are much better fleshed out in the books, as far as their relationship goes, but...
Alright.
P-Vader, what'd you think?
I would say that I had a really good time watching this movie. I think the cast is, you know, if Inception hadn't come out this year, it's definitely one of the best cast put together in movies this year. I thought that, you know, the sort of style was something I had never really seen before, where it's the movie's kind of pushed along, and it's kind of driven by like video game themes mixed with like music, and I like just really the special effects. I think Ben and I were talking about it. You don't even notice them. That they're special effects. They just kind of flow throughout the movie very well, and they really add to the story, I think. You know, that being said, as Millie Kane mentioned earlier, there may be a few plot holes in it, but I think it's really enjoyable. And I definitely kind of agree that in the future, you know, this movie will have a lot greater popularity than what the box office numbers have shown
right.
of it.
Dr. Bankman, what'd you think?
Man, Like I said earlier, it was an incredible film. It was completely awesome. It was unlike anything I've ever seen before. Visually, I was just blown away. I loved the visuals. So much fun watching the story unfold and using these great, cool little animation, I don't know, stuff.
Motion graphics.
Yeah, just throwing this stuff in there and making it a part of the story. Like, this is the world that they live in, you know? That was really fun for me to watch and kind of disheartening at the same time, because we kind of came, Mazer and I kind of came up with that idea to make a movie like that, like 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, we had an idea for a film where we have two characters who live in, quote, our real world, but are delusional. Completely delusional, and everything that you see in like the Scott Pilgrim world of like, you know, an extra life and all that stuff, it happens, but only in their mind.
So it was like, yeah. So you know, we're watching this unfold on screen, and well, I am, and I just, I'm just like, oh man, it's so cool.
Yeah, it's like we wanted
man,
to see that.
So cool. Now if I do it, I'm just ripping off Edgar Wright. No, but it was awesome, and I really enjoyed it. I thought the acting and everything was top-notch. Everybody did a great job in it. I really enjoyed the characters. I've never read the comics either, but I'm going to start reading them. Because there's more to the story, right?
Pretty much. The movies diverge a bit near the end from... I'm sorry, the books diverge a bit near the end from the film. Brian Lee O'Malley, the kind of creator of the graphic novels, was writing the final couple books as the movie was being in, you know, going through production and stuff. So they decided just to have their endings be separate and kind of let them do their own thing. But for the most part, it kind of... Well, I'm not going to tell you how they're different or similar. Just read the books and you'll find out.
Okay, cool. Is there room for a sequel?
No, I don't think so. I don't want a sequel.
So,
you know,
this is just like a standalone film, and that's cool too. You know, I honestly wouldn't mind seeing a sequel. But if it never happened,
Scott Pilgrim versus New York.
At all.
No, that was actually at Comic Con. Mazer and I were in line for something, and we heard someone talking about it, and he was just calling it Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe on accident. But we were like, that's the sequel title right there. It's not just the world, it's the universe.
Yeah.
Ben's like, no,
shut up.
I will punch you. The film combines all six graphic novels into one movie, into like a less than 2-hour movie, which is a ridiculous feat in and of itself, you know? But I think I don't want to see a sequel. As much as I love this movie and as much as the visuals are amazing and the cast is so great and it would be fun to see them kind of reunite, I just don't think it makes any sense as far from a storytelling standpoint to kind of reunite. And as much influence as Brian Lee O'Malley himself had in the production of this movie with Edgar Wright and kind of, you know, their kind of collaboration on this film, I don't think anybody would go through and just make up another story with these characters without O'Malley being involved. And I don't think he would kind of return to that same well. He's been working on this graphic novel series for 5 or 6 years or something ridiculous. So,
you don't think in a few years there's room for like maybe a straight to DVD starring like not Michael Cera but
Jesse Eisenberg,
you know,
the doppelgangers of all the cast members? No.
All right.
No, I don't. I don't know, man. I love this movie. I'm trying to think of things that you guys took most of the major points, which are awesome. The visuals and stuff. Yeah, P-Vader and I were talking about this right after we walked out, like, especially with the special effects. Watching Inception, I was kind of blown away with the special effects in that as well, but there were scenes in there during the hotel scene when Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character is kind of floating through where the film slows down just enough for me to be able to say, wow, how are they doing that? Like, that is blowing my mind, and I'm actually... It allowed me to kind of take a step back, step out of the movie, and be like, this is an amazing special effect that is happening right now that I'm witnessing. Scott Pilgrim moves so quickly that you don't even have the opportunity to take a breath and realize what you're watching as far as how they're doing things. It's like the fight scenes and stuff are incredible. It's like, you know, I've heard comparisons to The Matrix, and that's not that far off. Like, the style that Edgar Wright employs for this film is unbelievable.
Having, I mean, I do the featured section for Geek Tyrant, and Scott Pilgrim was a particularly hard thing to find any graphics for, mostly because it was either blurry or it just didn't really work. But going through and going through frame by frame to look at just what was in the trailer, there's, you know, when someone gets punched, there's a single frame that looks like it's hand-sketched out of all the detail in there, and then there's another frame that's kind of like an out. Like, every single time something happens on the screen, there's so much happening graphically in the details. There was an interactive trailer that came out, and they had talked about... I'm not sure if people are too familiar with photography, but the way you change the iris of a film camera is usually round, and sometimes hexagonal, and that can change the way it blurs in the background. And when they have Ramona on screen, it's as if you have all the objects blur into an X, and with Scott it blurs into a heart.
Huh.
And those are small little like visual details that they have throughout it. Also, they have X all over the place, and I mean they hide all these little like visual like Easter eggs everywhere.
Yeah,
throughout the entire film.
And like the stuff that kind of stood out to me was when people would just burst into coins.
Yeah,
that was really cool.
Yeah, you have to choreograph that where he either has like a partial sword, or
like
he's
a CG blade.
Or he's fighting air.
Yeah,
and then they're put in. It's probably just a partial sword, but and then the coins look great. The wire work on that pyramid is ridiculous.
Yeah, there's such a cool blend of like a bunch of different styles. You know, Vader mentioned a little bit about the video games and stuff. There's this like very obvious like versus KO, these video game influences that are completely blatant and awesome because of how blatant they are and how much they play off of our own kind of experiences as kids playing these games and stuff. And it's not like newer games. It's like vintage game, like, you know, Nintendo style, like old
the original
stuff.
Sonic.
And Tekken. They used all those like sound effects. There's like Zelda sound effects and stuff when they're going through a dream sequence and things like that. So if you guys haven't seen this movie, please go check it out. If you're listening to the Geek Tyrant podcast, you'll love this movie. One other thing that I wanted to talk about before we wrap it up was just the music on it. Like, Venkman, what did you think about the music? Are you a fan of this type of music?
Oh, yeah. I had a blast listening to the music. It was awesome.
This is another one that we could talk about as far as music, like bands and stuff that create, you know, fictional bands and stuff on
and
film.
Just a question about the source material. You said it came from 6 graphic novels. Would that be something that you would like to see animated?
Sure. They actually have a, like, kind of a in-between thing of, like, a Scott Pilgrim animation that you can find on Adult Swim, I think. If you go to Adult Swim's
website.
It's
a motion comic.
Yeah, kind of like a... And I don't know if I would go as far as to call it a motion comic, but it's like an animated thing using the same drawing style that Brian Lee O'Malley used in his graphic novels, but it's like full on animated.
So they don't
with
take,
characters like walking around and
so
stuff.
They don't take panels and
yeah, no, it's not like that. It's like it's kind of a little interlude as far as it gives a little introduction as to how Scott met Kim Pine, the drummer for Sex Bob-omb, in the movie. So that's, and then it kind of leads into the actual film itself, or like it's like basically just a little flashback that didn't make it into the movie that they kind of animated. But you guys can check that out.
I really liked the way the dialogue was delivered in the film. It had that kind of felt like an older acting style that had been brought into the film where the way they were talking was very much who they were. They weren't trying to be actory. It was like, you know, the bad guy who had the deep, you know. I think
Chris Evans
was he was just enjoying every moment of being this arrogant
Yeah.
Like, movie star actor.
Like, that's the cool part about this movie, is that it parodies and kind of, you know, throws satire into all these different elements.
Yeah.
This is the stuff that is sorely lacking from The Expendables, in my opinion. Yeah. But, yeah, exactly. Like, Chris Evans plays this actor who has a, like, just a team of guys that, like, you know, bends to his every will, and, like, a stunt team that kind of does some of his fighting for him, and his own kind of pride gets the better of him, as, you know, banking on the fact that he used to be a skateboarder, and he, like, refuses to back down to a skateboarding challenge because there are girls watching, and it's just, like, it's stuff that just feels very real in one sense, and then hyper-stylized when it actually comes into, you know, a kind of actualization in the actual movie. But
it's also fun to see Brandon Routh do some
non-Superman
stuff. he's pretty funny. I mean, seeing him on Chuck, he played, like, the bizarro Chuck, which was cool to see. But yeah, it's just seeing him as the super vegan, super-powered vegan. And I don't want to ruin the cameos, but those are hilarious.
Pretty great, yeah. Anybody else got any kind of closing thoughts or anything about the? I think we all liked it a lot.
Yeah, we all And I have to say, this movie made me wish that Kieran Culkin was in, like, every movie they made.
He was really good in it.
I really enjoyed watching.
He was fantastic and just so much fun. Every time he was on the screen, I knew it was going to be awesome.
His relationship with Anna Kendrick was pretty great. They're kind of I love it when Scott Pilgrim says, "You're such a gossipy bitch," or something like that's kind of who the character was. I've been reading a lot lately. Vince from Film Drunk especially wrote in his review that Wallace Wells is this gay character, but he's not played as, like, a super gay stereotype. He's not, like, this gay character that you've seen in movies hundreds of times. This is, like, he's gay, but nobody cares. It's, like, just a part of his character, and it's not played for a joke. It's just who he is, and it's, like, very kind of natural.
Well, he just goes...
He's the gay character, and that's the only characteristic
he
has.
Yeah.
Yeah. He goes after girls the same... He goes after guys the same way a guy would go after a girl.
Yeah.
This is maybe a very, very, very minor spoiler, but I love when he steals Anna Kendrick's boyfriend without ever even, like, saying anything.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. The entire cast, P. Vader had mentioned kind of early on that Inception was one of his favorite casts, and I agree with that. I do think that Scott Pilgrim has the better cast put together, because every single person here fit their role so much better, and if you guys get a chance to read the graphic novels, they look like their characters. It's insane. The casting department for Scott Pilgrim did some really, really great work kind of locking down these up-and-coming actors and actresses and stuff.
And a good hair department.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hair and makeup, right?
Huh.
So, cool. I think that's it, Dr. Rigman.
Awesome. Well, yeah, go see the movie, and now Mazer is going to talk about his favorite video game ever.
This is your favorite video game ever?
I don't know if it's my favorite video game ever. Although I've got to say that probably of all the games I've ever played, I've probably played the first game the most amount of time. So the game we're talking about is StarCraft II, which is the 12-year delayed sequel to the original StarCraft, and it launched in beta a few times, and it's going to be released in three parts. First part is the Human-Terran campaign, and then the next part, I think, is the Protoss, and then finally ending with the Zerg. I could keep talking, but do you guys have any questions?
I have no idea what you just said. I don't know what that means.
Okay, so did you guys, anyone play the game StarCraft?
No, I remember walking through various Walmarts and other kind of stores as a kid through the computer game aisle and seeing it staring at me multiple times, but I've never actually, you know, we're talking about 12 years delayed. That's crazy. I probably remember, like, in the first year or two when it came out.
Yeah,
seeing
I think
it
this came
shelf.
Out like 97, 90, I guess 98, if it's 12 years. So I just remember, I think, gosh, what was I was 16, so I was, like, at the perfect age to be playing this game nonstop all day long. I even had, like, two computers that I would set up so that I could have someone play LAN parties and play online, and I just got into the whole, you know, click per action, per minute, and I would actually play people online. I never really got anywhere other than just playing it online just for fun, but It was kind of the game that was the last of the 2D real-time strategy games. And it was just amazingly beautiful. And then for me, Warcraft 3 was like their first 3D RTS, and visually it didn't feel like it matched up with, it didn't exceed StarCraft. And StarCraft 2 is, I think some of the reason it was delayed was they were waiting for the kind of the low-end computer to be something that could run this pretty well. And I've got to say, visually, I mean, it's a complete upgrade to the original universe. And the in-game cinematics look as good as the cinematics from the game, the first one. And then the rendered cinematics in this look like a movie.
Really?
Yeah. So,
like, what can you compare it to as far as other games and stuff? Like, you know, something like Halo or something? Or yeah,
yeah. There's a scene where there's these aliens called Protoss, and a character called Zeratul is kind of like Nightcrawler bamfing all over the place in that cool like liquidy smoke thing, and he's fighting off these like Starship Trooper type bug aliens, which are called the Zerg. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Nice.
But the story is pretty good. I mean, it kind of reminded me of, I forgot the name of it, but it had Mark Hamill and all these FMV sequences. I'm forgetting the name of it. Something Starfighter or something like that.
Was it a computer game?
Yeah, it was a computer game.
Sewer Shark? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Okay.
I'm blanking out mentally on it, but yeah.
Wing Commander?
Wing Commander.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, it was Wing Commander.
Nice.
It was interesting because a game that came out semi-recently, Command & Conquer, did the full video, thing.
What was the guy's name? The guy who plays Jester in Top Gun, Michael Ironside. He was in that, right?
Yeah, he was in that. We had what's his name from Lost and the
really
the blonde Cylon. I'm really bad at it.
Battlestar Galactic characters.
Yeah, she actually does the voice of the Queen of Blades.
The Jeri Ryan? Is that?
No,
I don't remember. I've never seen Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
In any way.
The gameplay is not too far removed. If you played the first StarCraft, you're going to jump right in and not have any problems with it. That said, the single player campaign kind of preps you a little bit with some of the mechanics, but online multiplayer is kind of a really different beast because some of the units and some of the upgrades and stuff that you have in the single player, you do not have in the multiplayer. And that's only because they're just so overpowered and so ridiculous that it only works for those, like, story campaigns.
Okay.
But it was pretty cool. The maps are huge. The graphics are amazing. Animation is really cool. It just makes me really excited for the next game coming out from Blizzard, which is Diablo 3. I'm not sure if you guys played that either, but...
No. I've heard of it, again, like StarCraft, but I've never actually played it.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I think if you played the first StarCraft, you're probably going to love this. Just make sure you probably, you know, upgrade your computer system
if you
get it. Have
a system work and do it.
Yeah. It's also on PC and Mac, so that's also cool.
Awesome.
Good stuff.
Yeah, if I had the time...
Yeah, I
barely have any time. I don't have any time. What am I saying?
The reason I haven't done online multiplayer is because I've only played about 30 minutes every couple days. So
yeah. See, if I did that, nothing would get written up on the site.
30 minutes every 2 days?
I'd start 30 minutes, but it would turn into like 2 hours. That's my problem.
See,
so
I'm pretty well disciplined with video games. See, I work from home, so I could easily just burn through.
Okay, so
I have to be. self-disciplined.
30 minutes, that's like 30 posts for Bankman.
Probably.
I can't do a post a minute, people.
Maybe maybe realistically, probably at least 2 or 3, which is kind of freaky to think about.
Yeah. Post per minute, or...
No, post...
In a 30-minute period. No.
Yeah, so we're saying like every 15 to 10 to 15 minutes you could...
Wow. Staggering. Yeah. Dr. Bankman, you want to move into a little bit
That may
bit
not
of
sound the... quick, but try writing something yourself, and then you'll go, oh, yeah.
So we kind of talked a lot about the movies we saw. Took a lot of time talking about The Expendables and Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. I don't think we're going to get into any geek news talk at this time. But definitely hit us up next week when we'll see what there is to talk about. You know, every week's crazy. You never know what's going to break in this crazy entertainment world that we live in.
Indeed. I will say people should probably check out this trailer for Black Swan. We mentioned it in the very beginning. We won't talk about it now, but just like if you guys are interested in Darren Aronofsky's work, please check us out.
Yeah, I had nothing.
It looks great. Yeah. I didn't know what... Okay, now we're talking about it.
Let's move on.
Okay. It looks great. Okay. So, yeah. So, check that out. And also, real quick, this week, tomorrow, actually, on Friday, I got a couple movies coming out, like Piranha 3D, which should be awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
I heard somebody on Twitter, I forget who it was, say that, red, I guess is the proper term on Twitter, saying that Piranha 3D is the most hard R rating in the past like 10 years or something, and they have no idea how they got away with what was shown on screen. So now that's kind of piqued my interest a bit more. Yeah, so.
Alright.
I'm going to have to probably catch this with you guys or whoever, just because I know my wife will not watch this film.
Yeah, and my wife doesn't want to watch it either.
we'll figure something out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, The Switch, the classic-looking comedy slash dramedy slash whatever the hell with Jason Bateman and Jennifer Aniston.
It's kind of just popped.
Oh, did that come out
just,
this weekend?
It's kinda, coming out. This,
it just
this
popped up. It seems like they...
Yeah.
Just blitzed on it. I'm glad.
Came from nowhere.
I'm glad they did that because usually you see these advertisements for these films like 3 months out or 4 months out, and I feel like I have a shorter and shorter attention span. And every time I see a film with a lead that big that's not a tentpole film like, say, Tron,
yeah.
You know, I feel like, oh, did that come out already?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So. Our pick of the week would be Piranha 3D. Check that out if you get a chance. And if you haven't seen Scott Pilgrim yet, definitely go see Scott Pilgrim.
I'd say see Scott Pilgrim over Piranha 3D.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Almost guarantee it'll be better.
But you haven't seen Piranha 3D yet. You can't say that.
That's why I said almost guarantee.
I'm just joking, guys. I'm just giving you all a hard time. Calm down. Yes, go see Scott Pilgrim. Jeez Louise. Okay, so don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, because you can do that.
Also, for iTunes, leave a review for us, if you would. Kind of rate us and leave us a review. That kind of helps our visibility as far as podcasting and stuff goes in iTunes. So if you guys are fans, take a minute out of your day and throw us up a review on iTunes, if you would.
Yeah, that'd be great. Fan us on Facebook as well. Facebook.com/GeekTyrantFans. Follow us on Twitter at Geek Tyrant. Go to geektyrant.me. That's our store. Buy yourself an awesome Geek Tyrant t-shirt. Yeah! And you can always donate if you like what you hear, if you like what you read, if you want to support us and help this, you know, help keep the site running. You can donate at geektyrant.com/donate. And also, Ben P, I want to talk about your awesome podcast that you got going.
We recently started a podcast called the Not Just New Movies podcast. Our most recent episode, actually, we had Mazer on as a guest, and we talked about a movie called Fright Night from 1985, kind of a horror comedy that's going to be remade starring Colin Farrell sometime.
I'm looking
soon.
Forward to this remake.
Yeah.
It looks
definitely.
Like the cast has like David Tennant, and it looks exciting.
Yeah. So you guys can check that out at notjustnewmovies.com, actually, thanks to Mazer, who purchased that domain name for me. And you can find us in iTunes as well. Just search Not Just New Movies Podcast, and you'll find it there.
Yeah, you guys use what? Is it Mevio?
For yeah.
Because I just clicked that button, and it just subscribed me instantly. I think that works way better than the subscribe iTunes button we've been using, so I'm going to look into that.
Definitely. Other than that, have a great week. We'll talk to you next week about all kinds of great stuff. We'll talk about Piranha 3D. We won't talk about the Switch.
We'll probably get into some news.
Yeah, we'll probably get into some deep,
and maybe
like some heavy geek news.
Maybe we'll talk about fictional bands. Maybe.
Fictional
maybe.
Bands. And we might invent a new segment. Who knows?
Possibly.
Why not? Let's do it.
All right,
guys. Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for reading the site. We appreciate all you guys. And have a great day, evening, night, afternoon, morning, midday.
I think that about covers it.
Dinner,
etc.
Or kick.
Breakfast. Okay. Bye.
Putting that after the music on the way out.
Okay, sounds good.